Welcome to the Great Awakening Empowerment Tools Podcast. This is Dr. Brent Davis reading Chapter 9 from my 2014 book, The Floral Hand of God, Secret Healing Codes of Flowers Revealed. The chapter title is Encountering the Dancing Goddess. Introductory Remarks. I have been creating custom blend Floralife flower essences for about 20 years now. And in all that time, it has become clear that the greatest concerns most people have fall into two categories, love or money. There is often a deep yearning for better relationships or a pressing need for better finances. What is truly astonishing to discover is that frequencies of certain flowers seem to be touched with the extraordinary ability to both clear obstacles that prevent what we desire and to create attractor fields to draw to us our dreams and wishes. I formulate individual flower essence blends for both patients in my office in Nashville, Tennessee, and by phone consultation. Over the time that I have provided that service, I have seen scores of remarkable cases where the uncut flower essences I've prepared from around the world have incrementally shifted patterns in people's lives so that splendid relationships and better finances are able to manifest. Many practitioners that use my flower essences that I dubbed years ago as liquid software for the mind have corroborated my findings. The use of flower frequencies in Floralife flower essences is far from a shot-in-the-dark process. It is rather the strategic use of these gifts from nature in a manner that is described in detail as we explore coming chapters. This particular chapter, however, is a real favorite of mine, because of so many incredible experiences I had in Australia that led me on a path of fulfilling a fond wish of mine, to find the right partner and to create a family. There is one composite photo that shows the progress in my life from where I was at age 38 to the wonderful place I arrived at 30 years later, when my lovely wife gave birth to my and to her first child. That photo still astonishes me, and it may surprise you as well. About halfway down the following webpage, you will see the words Retro-Aging Photos here with a link. Click there to see the photo that really tells a story. The web address for the photo is a long one with words strung together. Dr. Davis 3-Day, that's the number 3, holistichealthintensive.com. Dr. Davis 3-Day holistichealthintensive.com. Reading now from Chapter 9. Encountering the Dancing Goddess. Every week in my practice, I have the opportunity and the privilege of seeing deeply into the psyche and the subconscious patterns of numerous patients. Fundamentally, I am asked by them to fix parts and pieces of their lives that are not working. After a certain amount of time in practice, and with the proper training in modern holistic chiropractic and applied kinesiology, it is relatively easy and fast to remove musculoskeletal pain or discomfort. What causes recurring structural problems and other chronic health complaints can be quite another matter, however, and good investigative skills are required to determine the real origin of a symptom and to remove it. Very often, the deepest causes are unconscious mind stressors, buried beliefs or memories that cyclically reactivate imbalance. At a fundamental level, most current life stressors result from issues relating to either money or love, relationship. When one feels better physically, one can often work with more diligence or greater creativity, and frequently that will solve money concerns. Matters of love, concerns of the heart and relationships, are much more complex. If there are relationship problems with difficult family members, they can often be solved by forgiveness, surrender, and acceptance. And if that doesn't work, by creating distance. The question of whether one does encounter or never finds a deeply aligned life partner, soulmate, can be monumentally significant. In the latter case, it can be enervating and truly vexing, because ultimately we cannot control on a soul level of affinity who shows up in our life. Misaligned relationships and absence of fulfilling relationships are an enormous cause of chronic health complaints. From the time I began practice, I have seen hundreds of patients caught on the horns of the dilemma of no partnerships or mismatched partnerships. Ever since I discovered and began utilizing uncut flower essences, relationships for my patients and my own relationships have incrementally improved. I have often wondered if there were flowers, that were integrated into the non-local field grid system, the mind of God, encompassing the earth, that would locate and draw ideal partners together. What an intriguing idea. I eventually arrived at the belief that surely such flowers must exist, or could be called into action. A movie titled The Adjustment Bureau, released in 2011, helped me understand why, from 2006 to the present, I have been so impelled to discover flowers that can not only improve relationships, but that go far beyond. The movie raises provocative issues relating to the conflict between free will and predestination. In a truly original and thoroughly entertaining way, it examines a profound subject. David Norris, the lead character played by Matt Damon, is a charismatic young populist congressman who has a real shot at winning a New York Senate seat. With precise timing, the tabloids publicize a dubious college prank of Norris that discredits him sufficiently so that he loses the race. As Norris heads for a bathroom to find a private place to practice his concession speech, little does he know that by an odd quirk of fate, one of the stalls is silently occupied by Elise, Emily Blunt. She is a beautiful and irreverently amusing professional dancer who took refuge in the men's bathroom to escape security guards chasing her from a wedding she had just crashed. In a muted voice, Norris repeatedly rehearses how he will rise above humiliation. Finally, Elise can no longer tolerate that she is surreptitiously eavesdropping, and she emerges from one of the stalls. Presumably, she has been charmed by Norris' authentic character, evident in his monologue, because she walks to within inches of him and envelops him with a completely engaging, irresistibly seductive energy. He is momentarily bemused, then realizes quickly he is mesmerized by her. Their chemistry is off the charts. They embrace and passionately kiss. Norris' campaign aide enters the bathroom, which breaks up their encounter, and Elise is forced to run off before they can exchange phone numbers, as she is pursued by security guards once again. The rapturous encounter with Elise infused Norris with such inspiration that a few minutes after that meeting, he gives the speech of a lifetime. He wonders if he will ever see this amazing woman again. Then some very clever filmmaking takes place, in which multidimensional time frames are depicted intermeshing as we witness the actualization of probabilities of manifestation in people's, Norris and Elise's, lives. We witness a smartly designed, anthropomorphized representation of the action of karma and fate at work. Percentages of probabilities of manifestation moving in lines toward or away from one another, visible on notebook-sized master control logs. The logs are scrutinized by a cadre of black-suited, fedora-wearing enforcers of the plan, the Adjustment Bureau, who do their best to make sure the changing life scripts of selected protagonists unfold the way they are supposed to. But what or who controls the plan? And what does it take to change how it unfolds? We are given only as much information as we need to know at each turn to follow the twists in the plot. At the end of the story, what we have learned is as follows. The first meeting of David and Elise was written into the master plan. The encounter with Elise was supposed to inspire David to make a great speech so that he would not disappear from politics, and so that he could, at a later time, fulfill his destiny to become President of the United States. But that was all that was allowed. It was believed by the creator of the master plan that each of them had bright futures so long as they stayed apart, and that each would never achieve his or her potential if they united. David was so smitten with Elise that he could not get her out of his mind, and he was hoping she would reappear in his life. Elaborate roadblocks were set up by the Bureau to prevent David and Elise from ever meeting again. But despite the Bureau's best-laid plans, David randomly encounters Elise on a city bus. This time, he made sure to obtain her telephone number. That act signaled a higher authority in the Bureau to authorize an other-dimensional assault on David so that Elise's phone number could be taken from him and destroyed. He was told that his mind would be wiped of all memory if he ever tried to reconnect with her. The Bureau felt that would end the problem and David would never encounter his beloved again. Despite the threatening warnings, David simply will not give up on his hope of finding and uniting with Elise. 3 years pass, and somehow the improbable occurs. In a city of 9 million people, David spots Elise from his bus seat as she is walking around a corner. He stops the bus and runs to catch her. When he does, he is so earnest in his explanation of how he has been kept from her that she lets him into her life. They have a long-awaited intimate encounter that is an extraordinary communion. David not only feels that Elise will never be a hindrance, but instead that she will spark his creative fire and be a great asset in his life. Finally, we witness an even higher level of effort made by the Bureau to separate the couple. Yet David's determination is so ardent and his will to stay united with Elise so powerful that it eventually draws the attention of the chairman, God presumably, who grants a rare dispensation, rewrites history, and essentially sanctions the union of David and Elise. They apparently will be able to achieve their destinies together. We see that huge effort can remove obstacles by changing what appears to be predestiny. We get the message that a pure heart and unyielding belief is what actually earns us the right to self-determination and to create manifestation of our heart's desire. The Adjustment Bureau has many fanciful parts, but the representation of how obstacles in our path that are generally never identified by us regularly alter our life outcome is, to me, brilliant. I have seen that very phenomenon many times in the lives of patients and in my own life as well. That observation at the core is what inspires me to keep finding new flower frequencies that act as beneficent agents in the plan, delivering dispensations that can rapidly make our life so much easier and more joyful. By providing nullifying frequencies that cancel disruptive forces and inspirational frequencies that upgrade and align us with God's source. We are told by teachers of great stature that when we are integrated and whole within ourselves, when our anima and animus are equally balanced, we can be entirely self-fulfilled beings whether we encounter a soulmate or not. At certain stages of evolution, and with certain individuals, that is undoubtedly true. But look a little deeper, it is not true for everyone. There are unions and partnerships so powerful that the sum is much greater than the parts. For those that do not feel and sense on many levels that this type of soul union exists, no framework for understanding it exists for them either. Given the choice of being happy or being dissatisfied depending on whether we do or don't find a profoundly compatible partner, it would obviously be wise to choose solo happiness. The interesting question is, how happy? Just happy or radiantly happy? Why not choose happy with an option for radiant happiness in all cases where the fabric of the quantum universe can be nudged in our direction by divine dispensation whenever it is possible so that we surely find our beloved? Isn't that one definition of a miracle? Our world really needs miracles at this time. Hold your hands in front of you. Extend a finger for each couple you know who have remained radiantly happy with each other after years of partnership. There are several telltale signs associated with radiant happiness in partnership. Some being a greater proclivity to laughter in each other's presence, the unflagging desire to affectionately touch each other, a twinkling in the eyes upon beholding each other after an absence of even one day, the ability to differ in opinion or strongly disagree without hostility, the holding of grudges, or spitefulness, the arising of an enlivening energy in each other's presence that results in the automatic lifting of weariness, no hint of domination, manipulation, or control. Do you need both hands for your fingers that are extended? Most people I have asked must think carefully to come up with even a few extended fingers on one hand. It occurs to me that this is not right. There are obstacles interfering with what should normally be a more prevalent alignment of compatibility. What would happen to this planet if radiantly happy partnerships abounded? Isn't that worth aiming toward? For several years, I've been searching for holy grail flowers that are woven so deeply into the energetic fabric of the universe that they touch the source codes of each light being. I have the impression that as part of universal intelligence, such flowers can receive signals from the divine that are a type of frequency dispensation, so that those who qualify can more easily encounter their beloved when their own radiance is enhanced by this specific floral activation. The idea that certain flower frequencies can improve relationships is not without precedent, because several flowers whose transformational abilities I discovered and have been using for years definitely change and improve relationships. A great deal of evidence that attests to this is presented on the floralive.com website. Well-proven examples of frequencies from extraordinary flowers that consistently perform the above-mentioned duties are blue-eyed grass, prepared in the Floralive Forest in central Tennessee for removing memories of emotional pain and trauma. Flor de la Luna, prepared in the high Andes for enabling the ability to receive love. And Flor del Oso, also prepared in the high Andes, for acting as a powerful conduit to link us to God's source for empowering the higher parts of ourselves. Before I set out on a quest in 2006, described following, the best example I had of a relationship flower is one that grows abundantly in the wild in the Floralive Forest where I live. It is called maroon bethroot. Its frequencies have the remarkable ability of stopping women, and men too, from attracting into their life troubled or unavailable partners. One might say this is a defensive flower, helping to protect us from trouble. From 2004 to 2006, it struck me numerous times that personally I would really benefit from finding proactive flower frequencies, quite different from the defensive ones, to draw more highly aligned relationships into my life. And, of course, such flowers would be enormously helpful for the population at large. But where in this world would I find such flowers? I ask myself. I have referred to my heavenly steering committee before, and they seem to have their fingers in my flower soup once again. I kept getting the strongest sense from them that I would find the flowers I sought in the land down under. Australia? I asked. Are you sure you want me to venture all the way down there? The answer was clearly yes, so I began researching the flowers of Australia. I compiled a list of about 15 flowers that I intended to meet and get to know once I got there. I was astonished to find that in Western Australia, basically a desert, there are an estimated 12,000 different wildflowers that bloom in September, during the short season when there is moisture. In March of 2006, I decided that I would go there, so I had some time to prepare before the next bloom cycle, and lots of preparations were needed because I didn't know a soul in that country. I decided to write an open letter to the natural health practitioners in Western Australia, letting them know of my intentions to explore their homeland for special wildflowers. I included the list of the wildflowers I was interested in studying, and I asked for contacts who might know something about those flowers and who might help me locate them. It was a great fishing trip. I received a wide range of responses. I primarily encountered genuine interest and support for my venture. But there were a couple of characters that thought I had, as the Aussies say, lost the plot. There was one response, a silent one, that was truly ominous, and I was never intended to discover it. About 3 months before my scheduled departure to Australia, I began noticing an odd malaise. I experienced unwarranted tiredness, and I perceived a low-level inflammatory response beginning in my system. I have all the tools and therapy that normally restore balance and eliminate those types of symptoms. I applied them and did not obtain relief. As time progressed, I realized that my health was being seriously eroded by an energetic source, but I could not determine where from. I knew that if I could not reverse what was going on in my body, I would not be able to make the rigorous trip I had planned. I called Natalia, one of my trusted clairvoyant friends, and described to her the odd phenomenon that I was experiencing. I asked her if she could please energetically trace from where the disruptive influence affecting me was coming. She said she would look into it. By the time she contacted me a few days later, I was already aware that the disruptive force was slightly diminished, so you can imagine I was truly curious to hear what she had discovered. By tracing the energy backwards to the source, she discovered that it led to an Aboriginal elder who was a board member of a natural healing community in Western Australia. Apparently, my letter had gotten into his hands, and when he saw the list of flowers I was going to investigate, his full wrath was aroused. Little did I know that among the list of flowers I had chosen was one particular flower, an exceedingly rare one, that, to some of the Aboriginal people, was among the most sacred of living things. On the spirit and soul level, that flower's frequencies had protected the native peoples from the unconscionable abusive actions of the whites that colonized and exploited Australia. It prevented the extinguishing of their heart energy and defeated some of the colonialists' annihilating intentions. From reading the energy of the flower, I knew without ever having seen it in person that it was very powerful. It was the number one flower on my list that I intended to study. Well, if the board member and the Aboriginal spirit elders that he called in had anything to say about it, that was just not going to happen. They clearly intended to psychically and physically keep me from ever setting foot in Australia. Natalia is profoundly non-confrontational, a true practitioner of nonviolent communication, spiritually gentle, yet powerful, and clear in motive. Those wonderful qualities allowed her to communicate on the inner levels with the Aborigine board member and to hear his concerns. She allayed his fears about me and explained my loving relationship with flowers. She let him know that under no circumstances would I ever exploit nature. He acknowledged hearing what she communicated, but did not yield with his directive about the one sacred flower. I was not to work with it. She let him know that she would deliver his message to me. Natalia has a straightforward, unadorned way of communicating. After listening to my description of how enthralled I was with the particular flower, she said, "Brent, I know you would really like to work with that flower, but don't. There are too many Aboriginal spirits involved now, and it would simply not be wise. They're pretty powerful, and you just don't want to mess with them." I asked Natalia why, if these Aboriginals were so energetically advanced, could they not read my motives and understand that I would do no harm to the plant? Could they not read my history and see the non-exploitive body of work I had produced? I asked her. She then explained to me that the power of these particular individuals was at a lower level earth magic frequency, and that their response to me was entirely instinctual. It was enough that I was white, and they didn't care to look any further, she explained. "Okay," I said, "let them know I will respect their wishes, and I will leave that flower alone." She said she would, she did, and the spell was lifted. My health returned to normal within 1 week. As soon as the disruption from the elder was cleared, I began to experience a harmless yet truly unusual phenomenon. Once or twice a day, a large, strange-looking flower with a vivid red color would flash in front of my face. I soon checked Australian flora manuals and found that the image I was seeing was the official territory flower for Western Australia, red and green kangaroo paw. My intuitive mind sounded up. That flower is just not from this planet. Well, whatever the case, it is a striking flower with a very unusual design. As time went on and my departure date grew nearer, the frequency of appearance of kangaroo paw kept increasing. In the 2 weeks before I left for Australia, the flower was appearing in front of my face several times per hour. I let it know that I got the message. When I land, I will visit with you immediately. I did advanced research before I left to find out where the flower grew around Perth and determined how long it would take me to get to this location on the first morning after my evening flight into Perth from Sydney. The first morning I was in Perth, I got my equipment together and immediately drove to the region where kangaroo paw was growing. I had to explore for a couple of hours to find just the right blossoms to extract, and it was a delightful experience. Once the extract was finished, I collected and bottled it and made good use of the extra extract that was left over. With considerable ceremony that involved my communication with the flower, I thanked it for its great attention and for the benefits I imagined it would bestow on me, though I didn't know yet what they would be. I proceeded to drink some of it, then drizzled a substantial quantity of the water extract on the top of my head so that it ran down my face and back and quite soaked me. The flower and I certainly became one. It wasn't long before I realized what the kangaroo paw flower had done for me. Simply, it removed all obstacles from the trip, and I was able to accomplish something that otherwise would not have been possible. There was grace at every turn. I met every person I needed to meet, except one, which I shall explain. When I returned to my practice, I soon found the astonishing test phrase for red and green kangaroo paw. That is, quote, I have the means and the power to restore paradise on earth. End quote. Never having been to this region of the world, I nevertheless found rare flowers unknown to me in hours rather than days, and was able to peacefully prepare extracts of 12 different flowers, driving over a range of about 1,000 miles in 10 days. The wildflower bloom started about 200 miles north of Perth and extended about 200 miles below Perth, and that was the range I explored. The one objective and desire that was not fulfilled? Meeting the woman of my dreams, my life partner. Interestingly, several of my seer friends independently predicted that I would encounter my beloved on this trip. A locational astrology reading I had done a few months before I left showed that for me, the one place on Earth where there were the strongest planetary conjunctions for romance and partnership was Perth, Australia, out in the middle of nowhere. Crazy, I said to myself. I found that prediction hard to believe, because I knew on this trip that I would have no time to socialize. Western Australia is about the size of Western Europe, yet it only has a population of around 2 million people, and 1 million of them live in Perth, where I would not be hanging out. By and large, I imagined on this trip I would be meeting sheep, kangaroo, and road trains, huge three-trailer freight trucks 140 feet in length, driving way too fast to ever stop for anything. I had no idea that I would have to drive such distances when I planned the trip, but had no choice if I wanted to encounter, photograph, and prepare the flowers I had chosen before starting travel. I fell into an apparently insane quest, yet there was great stillness as I sped at 70 to 80 miles per hour from location to location, highly focused and at the same time in a waking dream state. In midday, as I was driving a particularly barren stretch of road with a type of hypnotic focus, I had a truly memorable experience. Just a few inches in front of my eyes, there suddenly appeared the face of an Australian Aboriginal elder. He had a very warm and comforting energy, and I knew it was not the elder that initially tried to prevent me from traveling to Australia. There were no discernible words, but he sent me a very clear message. He let me know that the kangaroo paw ritual I undertook brought me into a resonance that was appropriate for my intentions to collect healing flower energies in his land, and that he, and elders associated with him, would help and guide me whenever possible. He told me that I would be protected and need not worry about interference from the lower frequency encounter I had had with the practitioner of negative magic. He communicated that I could investigate the special flower I had originally sought, but that I would not find it in a state that I could extract, though I should explore the region where I knew it was growing. He intimated that I would find other flowers in that area that contained important transformational frequencies. I truly appreciated his kind blessing, thanked him, and let him know I would do my best. From time to time on the rest of the trip, his wise and cheerful face would pop in through another dimensional plane, and I could feel his presence for just a moment. At the farthest northern reach of my trip, I found lodging with Russell Watkins and his wife, Emily. At first glance, Russell appeared to be, from my stereotypic image gallery, the quintessential Aussie farmer. He was stout with enormous hands of blunt-tipped fingers, a ruddy face, and a heavy accent. According to him, he had a, quote, average, unquote, farm, 5,000 acres, where he grew, quote, a bit of wheat, end quote, 300 acres, and mostly grazed cattle with a few sheep. Russell, however, was hardly an average farmer. He was a self-educated genius with an encyclopedic mind in the areas of habitat ecology, botany, animal husbandry, progressive farming technologies, grain and farm-related commodities markets, and much more. His brilliant mind could only be satisfied by communicating and corresponding with top-level university professors in different parts of the world. They apparently found him so engaging that many of them came to Australia to conduct research in his bioregion with his assistants. Once they were staying in his home, experiencing Emily's congeniality, intelligence, and great cooking, Russell was able to mine them for a wealth of information. He just kept getting smarter. Russell graciously gave up one day from his busy schedule to help me locate several flowers over a large area, extending from coastal reserves to a few miles inland. I made note of the roads we traveled and marked areas next to each of the flowers with brightly colored surveyor's tape, so that I would have a good chance of finding them when I returned the next day on my own. And return I did, later in the morning, on a day that began in a truly memorable way. I awoke early, before daybreak, eager to explore an area perhaps half a mile from the Watkins farmhouse. I had noticed it the night before because it rose above the flat plains, in a way signifying that it was an aboriginal mound. In all directions around the rise, it was flat as far as one could see. I set out with my camera, already mounted on a lightweight tripod, but I didn't get far because of a breathtaking scene that was developing in front of me. The dim light of the coming sunrise was rapidly giving rise to a horizon of rose and orange hues that served as a backdrop to the silhouette of kangaroos traversing the landscape. I was dumbfounded by the beauty of this scene and didn't even try to catch it on film. The lighting was changing too quickly, and I didn't want to miss the magic of the moment. Most of my walk toward the Aboriginal mound was similarly enchanted, and I was only able to snap a few photos. Halfway up the mound, I abruptly halted when a really big kangaroo jumped into the middle of my path, seemingly out of nowhere. At that moment, I realized that I had failed to inform myself about potential confrontational habits of large marsupials. He, no pouch, at about 6 feet tall, stood motionless perhaps 25 feet in front of me and felt rather intense. I did not flinch and held the prayerful wish that the kangaroo should jump away just as quickly as he had appeared. After about 15 seconds, he did, and as I was startled by the incident, I looked for a place to sit down for a moment. I noticed an open spot in the middle of flowering plants on the edge of the path and seated myself there while I regained composure. I scanned the area on all sides of me and, seeing no other potential visitors, was able to relax. Then a special occurrence took place for me of the sort that gives rise to the message on an inspirational poster, quote, "Life is not measured by the number of breaths we take, but by the moments that take our breath away," end quote. Nearby, I spied a flower. She was truly feminine, a rare beauty, and so distinctive, gorgeous pink blended with dove gray. I had to move closer to gaze at this magnificent creation. This flower indeed took my breath away. The pink and gray components of that flower gave me the sense of a feminine, poised, elegant princess. Moving in the breeze, the brilliant yellow and red adornment at the lower part of the flower reminded me of the tassels at the bottom of a seductive, dancing gypsy's skirt. To me, this seemed a marvelous combination, wild, raw, abandoned, combined with poise, elegance, and grace. That is how I thought of naming this flower, Dancing Goddess. I felt as if I could photograph her endlessly, but I stopped when I saw the position of the sun was nearing time for extraction. I put away my camera gear and sat for a few minutes in meditation with this beautiful presence. Then, all of a sudden, I was struck by a wonderful thought. What if this flower were my dancing goddess, the female my friends had predicted I would meet? And what if she emanated the attractor field that would help to draw my beloved to me? It was a wonderful thought. Surely it could work for many. When I returned to my practice with the essence of Dancing Goddess, it did not take me too long to characterize how it worked. I found several test phrases on my patients that demonstrated how this flower repatterns the unconscious mind. I found that Dancing Goddess possesses frequencies that really liberate women to be more feminine, that is, if they wish that to occur. The purely male part of me said, well, why wouldn't all women want to be more feminine and attractive? Then the clinical part of me recognized why many women choose to largely abandon an admirable feminine power of attraction. First, what if a woman attracts the wrong man, as she has before, and has to endure again the hardship of a bad relationship? Second, many women in the Western world have never been exposed to the culture of the feminine, the tribal grandmothers, wise women, and the sisterhood of extended families of women who naturally train each other in the art of being what is truly feminine. For women, the two principal test phrases for Dancing Goddess are, first, quote, I am being the goddess energy that draws the ideal partner into my life now, end quote. When a woman repeats this phrase and a previously strong indicator muscle weakens, becomes inhibited, it means that she is not being that attracting goddess energy. The second test phrase is, quote, I fear abandonment, end quote. That is such a huge theme for many women. When that phrase is found to test true in female subjects, nearly always they nod with the recognition that they already knew that was an issue within them. Astonishingly, dancing goddess can remove disabling feelings of abandonment rather quickly. For a man, as I suspected, dancing goddess can initiate the attractor field which draws goddess energy into his life. That test phrase is, I am emitting the attractor field which draws the ideal woman I desire into my life. During the period of years since 2006 that I took Dancing Goddess and numerous other flower essences, I was graced by the additional presence in my life of three beautiful and spiritually attuned women. Each, coming at a different time, possessed wonderful and rare qualities that helped rid me of some illusions and spurred me in my evolution. But each also possessed an unalterable force that was a deal-breaker, deep memories of failed relationships with men, a profound fear of being dominated or controlled, and a guardedness and prohibition against vulnerability. Women often don't seem to realize that such memories form a palpable wall around them, indicting decent men with good intentions before they even have a chance to build trust. It is a very negative, self-fulfilling prophecy. And the poor fellows that encounter that affliction in women are shipwrecked before they get aboard. Each of these women served to hold a mirror in front of me. I adopted a resolute commitment to identifying in myself and removing whatever unhealthy frequencies I could find that were making it necessary for me to encounter potential partners with the same troublesome characteristics and to miss encountering my beloved who I can feel exists. I realized that nearly all of my dreams have been granted to me. And for that I can only feel gratitude, though it has taken quite a while for some of them to materialize. For me personally, the biggest dream is yet to be fulfilled. For some time, I have been aware that the loving and transformational energy of flowers has helped me to prepare a field of wholeness for a truly extraordinary woman, a place of tranquility for my beloved where children of a whole different order can be conceived and raised in peace in the company of nature's aliveness. That is a dream I see, wish, and work toward for everyone. We cannot bring a dream to completion until we can fully grasp the scope of it. As I prepared for another trip of a lifetime in May of 2011, serendipity provided me once again just what was needed. It was a book, a series of books, that explains how we expand our field of awareness so that our light-filled dreams can come to pass. The significance of this book is soon explained, and how it is perfectly aligned with the most astonishing flower frequency collection trip I experienced until that time, one that I had to wait 19 years to take. Commentary. In this post-podcast commentary, I want to emphasize that experiences and references I describe in the Floral Hand of God book and that I am reading here are specifically chosen with the hope that they will leave a lasting impression to encourage you to move onto a path of transformation. One of the great problems we face in this modern era is the disappearance of communal village gatherings that offered members the chance to discuss special positive events that occurred in their life. A benefit of this was to inspire hope and enthusiasm among comrades. So my stories surely have that intention. I choose stories to tell based on themes that always include the appearance of seeming miracles. We have lost belief in miracles, and we pay for that dearly. Miracles are occurrences that we cannot explain in the context of our limited four-dimensional living. But there can be explanations if we understand the quantum world at higher dimensions. We will be investigating the unseen world of the miraculous from a quantum biology and physics point of view, much more as we proceed into the central section of this book. I am mentioning the importance of miracles because my uncut flower essences can produce changes that are not normally explainable. Therefore, they seem miraculous. But if we understand that some blessed flowers are unique receptacles of concentrated, benevolent energy waiting to be released, then what seems miraculous can be better understood and welcomed into our life. To some people, the test phrase of kangaroo paw could seem preposterous. That test phrase is, quote, I have the means and the power to restore paradise on earth. What does that really mean? I take it to mean that the flower delivers a huge blast of positive energy to dislodge the darkness that may be directed at us or that we carry, and in that respect, we connect to the higher powers of light. If enough people have that connection, the beauty that is rapidly being extinguished from this earth could be rapidly returned, and we could indeed be living in the paradise that our earth can be. One small paragraph at the end of the chapter bears repeating with some explanation now the time has passed since the book was published. Quote, For some time I have been aware that the loving and transformational energy of flowers has been helping me to prepare a field of wholeness for a truly extraordinary woman, a place of tranquility for my beloved, where children of a whole different order can be conceived and raised in peace in the company of nature's aliveness. End quote. Well, I'm recording this podcast on my farm in the middle of a forest that is that place of tranquility, filled with nature's aliveness, and inhabited as well by my lovely wife. And in the previous chapters I've already read, I described how highly implausible events aligned so that this beautiful dream could manifest. I watch my little baby experiencing this magnificent setting. I am absolutely certain that had I not encountered what I have described already, and what is coming up soon, these wonderful blessings would not have occurred in my life. And I am certain from experience that if you understand the flowers and give them a chance, wonderful things can happen for you as well.